Unreal. Uncensored. Unradio. CliffCentral.com.
Adrian Groenewald, Louis Groenewald, and Alison Nyandu. We're here, the foundation panel, talking leadership in the first half hour. We did try and learn from the whole Cell C CEO situation last week. And it's not easy, you know, when you're on a public platform. Anyway, we have a book review with Lorraine, and then after that, Tawood Lorty, we're going to have a positive conversation around leadership. Lorraine, very quickly, the book you've got today.
The book is called How to Be a Leader. I'll send a copy to Mr. Dos Santos because it speaks about how you communicate with yourself, with other people, and with your conscience.
Let me see the front and let me see the cover. Okay, very simple.
Wow. Yeah, it's a very short, powerful book written by Martin, I can't pronounce the surname, Gerhard and Cosmina Popper. They run a school of life which is based in London, and they teach people how to become better, better people, how to create a more satisfying life for themselves. I rated the book, or this book, 5 out of 5, and it's the first time that I ever do. That just tells you how much I enjoyed reading the book. Simple, straight to the point, practical, uses everyday example to demonstrate leadership principles and communication. As I said, the central idea of the book is no one is born a leader. With the right amount of self-knowledge, authenticity, anyone can become a good leader. It touches on 3 elements: the relationship with you, the relationship between you and others, including nature, you and the shadow, which is the dark side or our unconscious side of who we are. And that touches on the fears we have, our weaknesses, and so forth. So, yes, I would recommend this book for Mr. Dos Santos and any leader there who wants to lead properly.
You get that final stab, eh? It's just like the final word.
Look, I think Mr. Dos Santos has a great opportunity here to reinvent himself and hopefully inspire other leaders. Because, again, someone once said, you know, don't let a great crisis go to waste. I think it was Obama's advisor in 2008.
Well, in some ways, let me just say, in some ways he is. For him to stand up and really apologize all over the place, that showed something already. Okay, now how far he takes it, firstly. And secondly, he is a great leader. What has he done with Cell C? Let's not just look at this situation. And I'm not just defending him. He has done miracles and he has a team behind him no matter what's happened over the last week. And there's a bit of blowing this thing up and there's something to learn. There's wrong and there's right. We cannot just look at that. He's done miracles with Cell C and we must learn from that. So go to last week's show and download the first half hour podcast, our master lesson about turning around a business. Today we've got a leader that's got incredible experience. Tawood Lorty, welcome to the studio.
Thank you, Adrian.
It's good to have you with us. I met you years ago when you were at Old Mutual. You spent a lot of years there, quality good years, and we'll go there in a moment. But just take us back your career, how it started, before we look at the broader issues. You're an actuary.
Well, I studied to be an actuary. I can't classify myself as an actuary because I changed my route along the way.
Okay. So yeah. You just did the first basic degree,
and then you didn't
continue.
That's right.
Did you then end up at what? Did you go to Old Mutual then, or was it Liberty Fund?
Of course, I went to Old Mutual, and that's where my training started. That's really where I spent most of my working life. I joined Liberty 7 years ago, after 22 years at Old Mutual.
Sure, and that was a big step, because you were an Old Mutual guy. I mean, that's it. That's the impression I got when I met you first time. In fact, I'll say it, you don't have to respond. You were on your way to be the CEO. I felt you should have been at the time. Put that aside. Eventually you left and you started not at Liberty itself, you started at Stan Lib.
That's right. I was the CEO of Stan Lib.
So good training. And Old Mutual is, it's one of those companies like General Electric. They just send leaders into the whole world. They used to really be like a leadership school, isn't it?
Of course, and they trained a lot of people that are obviously influential in financial services. But I looked back at that with fondness because it's really about training, but it's also about growth. Moving is about growing. Yeah. And I think the big part of anybody who wants to develop themselves and contribute to society is to grow and leave the family. That's how I think of my journey from Old Mutual, that I had to leave the family to grow. And it's been an exciting journey since.
That's a nice way of looking at it, Ellis.
Yeah. I totally agree with Tabo in that regard. I mean, I remember when my boss was sitting on my left in January when I was leaving Business Report. I said, look, I'm like a child leaving the house, you know, to go out and see, you know, how everything else is. I'll be back. Who knows?
You know, you never know.
The last thing you need is your children nesting and, never leaving the nest.
Yeah, and but then now you've been away for quite some time, and I just want us to explore a little bit the challenge of adopting a new family almost. So yeah. So you went to Liberty, and not too long after became the CEO. You weren't brought up there, Thabo. I mean, just tell us in all honesty what it was like to try and grasp the culture, the legacy, the heritage, whatever, of this business. Like, it wasn't a problem with Old Mutual for you at the time. But, of course, at Liberty, you had to go through that. Mm. Did it take a while? Was it easy? These days, leaders jump from one industry to the other. We'll talk about it in a moment. But what was it like?
Well, first of all, it was a big jump. First of all, the things I was aware of that were different about Old Mutual to other parts of the organizations actually didn't matter much. The things that mattered afterwards are the things that I was not even aware of. So that itself was my blind spot, so to speak, was eliminated in the process. And that was exciting. The second part, though, which is really for me what attracted me to Liberty, which is part of the Standard Bank Group, I remember Sim interviewing me saying that we are really trying to make a difference from downtown Johannesburg. We are trying to effect a financial services group that's going to impact the world from downtown Johannesburg. Clearly, coming from Old Mutual, we were being run out of London, working with an organization that was based in South Africa, based in downtown Johannesburg, had an appeal to it. So that was the first part, I mean, of difference that I experienced, that it was a proudly South African group that really didn't make bones about that. In fact, they really wanted to use that as a kind of a weapon that they are taking to the world. So that kind of affirmation of being South African, being African, was an important part. I think the second change was also learning. Growing up in a family, you don't have to learn family members. You grow up there. You know everybody. You actually take it for granted. That's how it works. When you have to go to a new environment, you have to consciously learn who's who in the zoo. How do people behave? Cultural things that I took for granted. I think I was not even aware of them at Old Mutual suddenly became important because this new family was behaving differently. That itself was a major growth point for me because I really learned to know what's important in that environment. I learned to be, my eyes opened up to some of the things that perhaps before I took for granted. I suppose the last thing was that it's also an old group like Old Mutual, Standard Bank Group in general, but actually it's different. They are driving a completely different strategy, and that also was an eye-opener because I had thought that, you know, there's only one way of doing things, and they were doing things differently, and they also had a very interesting legacy. So all that was useful for me and opened my eyes that there's a different world out there.
So jumping from within the industry, from one business to the other, which is kind of the same business, same industry, was even challenging, you know, if you're really honest about it. There was a time, Louis and Alice, that I don't know, it was like if you're a great leader, you can go from one industry to a totally different industry, catch up in a matter of a few weeks or a few months, and then lead that business. Do you think we've moved away from that? Has the world become too complex? Does the business require too much effort and focus and knowledge and expertise from the CEO, even though you must now 90% lead? Are we moving away from that?
In parts, we are. And I think it's got a lot to do with, first of all, just the regulatory environment. We're a highly regulated industry, particularly financial services. So the fit and proper requirements are real now. You have to know what you're doing. You have to understand the risks that you're taking. You have to be able to guide and lead people within the context that's been set for you. So, yes, there is an element of that says that you have been grounded in your kind of industry knowledge and all the technology that goes with that. You have to really understand that. But I don't think that takes away that you still have to be a leader. And I think that is a common factor. You have to lead, and organizations in those sectors are in different phases. There are organizations that are mature, that require different energy. There are organizations that are still a startup, that require that. So that trade of leadership is still obviously something that's fundamental. But yes, you have to learn the stuff that's got to do with that industry. There is a lot more emphasis around that.
Alice, you may not have thought of this consciously, or maybe you have. You've reported on businesses and business leaders for a very long time now, even overseas. Do you think we're seeing less of leaders jumping industry? A bit like Maria Ramos did from, I don't know, government, Transnet, bang into banking. Do you think we're seeing less of that
Yeah, I think we are, especially if you look at, you know, what's happening within the technology space. Mm. You know, if you've worked for a particular tech company, you often see people gravitating towards, you know, that same space, even if it's at the startup phase or a mature company. Because I think it's partly a reflection of the fact that you got to be grounded in your knowledge about a particular space that you're operating in.
Mm.
Which brings a very interesting point. You know, just as Tabo was speaking, I'm thinking there's so many times we keep mentioning the word learning. Mm. And I'm interested to know from Tabo, as a leader, how does he learn? What are we talking about when we say learning? You know, you got to learn this, got to learn that. I mean, that was partly what we spoke about in our previous conversation.
Yeah, but, you know, how consciously are you learning? And they say successful leaders are those
who prescribes what you have to learn.
And have you heard the statement that says you'll be successful if you can unlearn faster and learn faster? Those who will be successful are the ones who can unlearn quickest and learn again something new. Is that what we're talking about, or is it a broader concept, Alice's view? Question?
Yeah, I think it's really specific for different situations. Alistair, I'll build up on the concept you've mentioned of tech companies. We are moving into a world that is becoming a lot more digital. The rules of digital are not confined to a particular industry. They are being applied in a number of industries, and they are transformational to those industries. Now, I have to learn new tricks. I don't have to learn the details of running an asset manager or an insurance company. But that value chain, which I grew up in and I've understood so well, is likely to be completely reconfigured, disrupted, and transformed and disrupted. Now, I have to learn to move with that pace. Now, that's something completely new for me, because it's got, you know what I mean? I can't bring my previous 27 years, 30 years experience of the insurance and asset management to bear in a situation where somebody is going to reconfigure the value chain, mm-hmm. reconfigure the proposition and how it's presented to the customers. Mm-hmm. So yes, there is an element of that. I think the second element is that you still have to know certain things and clearly to be on the table. I think that's where learning is important. From a leadership point of view, organizations like ours are about leading people. You have to learn to lead people and learn at the pace of which people are developing, because people as an organism...
And the attitudes change, don't they?
Absolutely, absolutely. Mm. That is a second, for me, area of learning, that the way to lead in the 80s in South Africa is very different to leading now. Mm. We are leveraging totally different resources. We are leading organizations that are multicultural, multi-geographic, operating in all sorts of places. That's a totally different experience to my grounding inside one particular organization. So my lessons there are about actually learning diversity at an extreme, you know, diversity not as in race in South Africa, but diversity across geographies, across different environments in terms of social circumstances. We've got markets that are highly developed and markets that are not developed.
Mm.
And the pace around which we have to learn and how to adapt and respond to them is different. So I believe it's this situational element that our situational issues are changing so fast on us.
An attitude of people, what's changed there over the last few decades, do you think, as you lead individuals? I know in mining, huge attitude shifts for the mining leaders, how they used to lead employees. Yeah. But what would you say about that, the attitude shift?
Yeah, I think the first part for me on that, Adrian, is that we have all become a little bit more global in our orientation. I think when we were leading in a small, call it a fishbowl, it was different to leading in an open economy and an open world, where lessons learned in China reverberate in our shop floor very quickly. So we have to learn to accept that. Our attitude towards change, for example, has to be that it's a constant. It's not something that actually you can manage. Actually, you just have to cope with it and find a way of assimilating. So that's an important part. The open world and open economy is a big factor on it.
Mm.
I think the second element is that we are leveraging people with completely different backgrounds. So we have to keep that open-mindedness that, you know, ideas come from everywhere. And you have to then have an attitude of being open first and accepting first that, you know, whatever the person is saying could be right. You can't afford to just be skeptical, because you could be shutting off some of the great ideas that emerge out of that. So I think this whole concept of being open-minded
becomes important. You can't be the all-knowing leader at the top and you're there because you know everything.
No.
It's different. Your followers are more educated, more informed. more connected. So you've got to assume that they know a heck of a lot, and they may be seeing things that you have never seen.
Absolutely.
Louis Ellis, comments on that?
A concept in the old days used to define quite easily who your stakeholders are. Now, what you are really saying is that the concept of stakeholders have changed dramatically. It's far broader and deeper and global as well. Before, when you say stakeholders, you're shareholders and, you know, one or two, and suddenly it's changed dramatically from that point of view. So a leader must keep up with that.
Yeah, look, I think it's interesting that we touch on this bifurcation that's happening, you know, across industries. And, you know, I'm a keen follower of Peter Drucker's work. You know, in the 50s, he came up with the concept of a knowledge worker. You know, as a journalist, I always thought it meant he was speaking about my industry. But, you know, knowledge worker is pretty much everyone today. You know, whether you're talking financial services, you're talking, you know, health, and so on. Because, again, it's about what technology allows everyone to do, you know. And then you have that whole thing about how do we all get information at the same time and what do we do about it. So I think it's something that we're likely to see continue. But leaders have to consistently and constantly be responding to this change as it happens.
Insurance houses seem quieter. As I said to you before, there was a time when Old Mutual was everywhere and Liberty was everywhere, sponsoring this. You know, they had their face everywhere. But now, not so more, so much. Maybe I'm missing it, or maybe they've found their niche more, or maybe it's cost, maybe it's just wise. I don't know. Just tell us if that's true. They're more niche. They're quieter on the marketing front, on the promotional front, as an example. And then from there, we can just look at where's this industry going? How is it really impacted by technology and the transformation of the broader economy and the world? But first, are they quieter? Is my observation correct?
I don't think they are any quieter, Adrian. I think what's important is that we are seeing more voices engaging the public at large. So there is quite an increase in the volume of communication that's hitting you and I.
Good point.
And it's hitting us from multiple media. We've got advertising, which used to be TVs and all the call it above the board advertising. Complete face of it is different. You go to an airport today, you're bombarded by messages from when you leave the plane. I don't think we are desensitized to that you walk from the plane. There is so much information all the way to when you get into your car, coming from the insurance companies, investment companies, retailers, wine estates,
electronic makers.
I mean, it's amazing for me how much volume of stuff is out there loud and just kind of jarring our senses. So that's the first part.
Okay.
I think the second part is that we have learned to be discerning as people. We tend to move for things that are of interest to us. And it's often fascinating that technology has enabled us to then narrow down that and become much more precise and say, what do I want to be influenced by? By virtue of where your preference lies, you then tend to focus on that. That's where you'll hear voices then that come from that line. You kind of switch off the others because you're not interested in that. I really believe that we are getting closer and closer to the market of one. So clearly you're not hearing insurance companies because we're not talking to you specifically.
I don't need it anymore.
We don't talk to you specifically, and I'm going to need to make sure we change that.
Well, maybe I don't feel I don't need anything. But good point. Those are some valuable points there. We are bombarded by... And the point is our head goes down to the phone now as soon as you leave the plane. So is it on there? Is Liberty on there? You know, is Liberty catching me there? Because that's my first concern when I get off that damn plane is my emails, my Twitter, my Facebook, SMSs, WhatsApps. It's ridiculous.
The expression market of one is a good one.
Yeah, market of one. But at the same time, I think there's great opportunities here because what Tabu is saying, you know, speaks to what was said by someone called Alvin Toffler, who wrote the book Future Shock, who talked about the prosumer instead of consumer. So with all this information coming to us and bombarding us, it also creates an opportunity for us to identify things that we want that speak to our needs, you know, the solutions that we seek for our own problems. So the way I engage with Liberty is totally different to what I would have engaged, how I would have engaged them, say, 20 years ago. Because of the tools that are at my disposal.
Yeah, Tabo, everything is changing. The whole world is transforming, and we as a society, interesting, when we say transformation in South Africa, a lot of things, certain specific things pop up in our minds. Mm. In the meantime, the whole world, the bigger picture is transforming as well. And we can be so fixated by our own important transformation issues, local transformation issues, that we miss this much bigger transformation happening. Let's take it a little bit further, because we must also say, how do you lead with all of this? And I think we hinted towards it earlier when you said you've got to be much more inclusive and listen. Yet you must make decisions faster than ever before. So that is damn difficult also to try and balance that. But where's your industry going? The world economy is growing. I think you remarked in a message to me, it's growing without creating jobs. Everything around us is transforming. Everything is changing. The main culprit probably being technology, social media, all of those. And they call it the Internet of, what is it, IO?
Internet of things.
Internet of things, you know. Everything is becoming the web and Internet of things. How's your industry transforming? Is it dramatic? Is the drama still coming? Just give us a feel for where you are and where you're going.
Yeah. The challenge with established industries, particularly old industries like ours, is that we don't see change until it has happened. So clearly, the first thing is to worry about it, that change is happening because we have changed. I always say, my children don't understand what I do, not because they don't understand the technicality, because they don't understand it's relevant the same way that I do. So our industry is changing because the behavior of people is changing around us. And I'll mention three elements on that theme of transformation and particularly around data. First of all, our business, and from an insurance point of view, is based on data we've accumulated. We underwrite based on body of information we have built over time.
Mm.
We used to pride ourselves on the depth of that and how well it's been built, and clearly that has changed. The source of information about you, Adrian, is not what you tell me. I can actually pick up a lot more by just monitoring what you do on your cell phone, because it tells me a lot about your activities, it tells me a lot about your orientation, it tells me a lot about even expenditure, if I'm allowed to access that information. So I can actually underwrite better by not asking you a question, by getting access to a device like mobile, like your bank account. Now, clearly that's transformational for our industry, because it means that the information we need to be able to underwrite you better is no longer at our disposal. It's available. It's somewhere else.
Mm.
And now we need to tap into it to actually give you a much more accurate reflection, in our case, of a risk rate that we want to give you. So that's the first example, that the cornerstone of our industry, building volumes of data, that's being replaced by data that's available, and technology has enabled that to happen.
You're not the sole owners of that kind of information
anymore. The second element is that we used to rely a lot on the fact that we will give you advice, and in the main, that advice really would be, you'll get it only from us. Nobody else will really have that. But social media provides probably, I would say, arguably one of the most important pieces of advice, because you can collaborate now. What I'm saying, what my advisor is saying to you, what my product is saying to you, you can source information and feedback on that. Within seconds, you'll have a few people telling you, that's a whole lot of, you know, or actually this is something, there's something in that. In fact, you probably get mixed information. But the true test being, whom do you trust now, changes immediately, because there are certain sources then that will give you that information. You'll trust their feedback, you'll trust their input, and you can collaborate that. So the ability then to really, truly deliver to the customer proposition improves.
Mm.
Because people can actually verify the things that are happening and source information far quicker than actually we can.
All right.
That's a second transformational issue that is really, really important.
Big stuff. Yeah, big
so,
thing.
So is what Tabo was saying, simply saying, we no longer sell insurance via briefcase. Is that what you're pretty much saying?
I say we still have to sell insurance by a briefcase. But if we assume that that's the sole source of information, we really are missing the point.
Mm-hmm.
I still have to incentivize and advise and get you to go and act. That may involve somebody talking to you.
Mm-hmm.
But in truth, the purchase decision, it's informed not by that person anymore. It's informed by a whole lot of other things that you can source yourself.
Mm.
You can. So I'm saying there's a lot more information now you use in making a decision. It's no longer one side. Mm. And we have to take cognizance of that.
And the most fascinating thing about data is that we only talk about 20 years. I came across something that said data that's come through over the last 20 years is equivalent to all the data, you know, since the beginning of life, really.
Mm.
Just imagine the scale of that.
And that's compounding. It's like in the next 2 years or something, we'll have the equivalent of the last 20, 50 years. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's actually mind-boggling, exciting, and actually, it makes me scared. You said there was a third thing. A third transformation issue in your industry.
The third transformation is really that, just what you said earlier on, that you believe you don't need insurance. In other words, we become more discerning about what we need. Whereas before, in the absence of really knowing a lot about ourselves, just because there was limited information about things, a lot of people now are far more direct about what they require. So in most cases, I really believe that industries like ours can at best be a partner with you than sell you, be a provider to you, because your life journey, as you see it now, you are able to act it out as opposed to just imagining it. You've got enough technology and other providers who are willing to work with you along that life journey. Now, that's really different. So we can't, on a static basis, think that we can just offer you a 20-year life policy. Your needs change dramatically from one period to the other, from one year to the other, from this business to the next. We need to constantly find our way. So that has changed how we have to think about our industry, because it's a long-term industry, the insurance part at least. And it assumes that you will have purchased a product for us for 20 years. In reality, you don't have a 20-year horizon. Your planning horizon is actually a lot shorter. In fact, it's driven by major events in your life that you're going to go through, some of them very rapidly.
Okay, so we have a time issue, and I want you just to give us, therefore, the kind of leader we need to be, not just in your industry, but in the world today, and the kind of leaders you're employing at Liberty.
Yeah.
Just give us that therefore, and then, Louis, you want to comment? Or just before you do, Louis?
No, I just want to comment. I can see how your consultants being adjusted in the training. They've got to keep up. Liberty's also always has a great reputation of quality consultants. So I can see the need of that is very important.
Yeah, a different ballgame now. Okay, just finally, what kind of leaders must we employ? And that's your message maybe to leaders listening now.
The truth, though, is that there are some things that are really fundamental about leadership. I heard earlier on that authenticity is important. A lot of the people we engage with want authentic organization. They want you to do exactly what you say you stand for. Mm. So the need for that from a leadership, from the organization, becomes critical, because people can test and collaborate that or actually prove it otherwise. So that's an important part, I think, that really comes to the fore. I think the second element from a leadership point of view for me is we have to really learn to harness the things that are around us. And the things that are around us are no longer kind of narrow and straightforward. For me, I've just come from a meeting where I was talking to somebody who's analyzing data. But that person is not a statistician. It's more a behavioral scientist who actually talks about how societies and beings digest and engage information. Now, that's something totally new for me because having worked with numbers all my life and being quantitative in my approach, from a behavioral point of view, it's something that's really a new chapter all the way. So having to learn that actually we're dealing with genuine living organisms that adapt and move, and we have to keep up with that as opposed to assuming this is the statistical distribution that's fixed. It's actually, you know, it's a thing of the past.
Fantastic advice, and that's the end of our show. I just want to end off with a Sibanye executive leadership thought. As you deliver your message out there, remember that society in general is hypocritical. Now, that sounds rough, but know that that's the case, and therefore be very careful what you say. Be authentic. Otherwise, you'll be hit very hard, as we've seen the last week, and as many leaders have seen, and that's not necessarily even if you're hypocritical. And then you have to look at more than what is said. The context, the intent, and is it in fact true? That was a great show. Good conversation with Talbot Lorty, CEO of Liberty. Thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Louis and Alice. We move on now to the Business Masterclass. Very interesting. Just before we do that, next week we have a repeat show. It's a public holiday, but Bertie Lubner, the interview we had with him, he passed away recently. Alice, I don't know if you know, but a great, great man and a great leader. And therefore, on that public holiday, we'll play that specific show. Next up, our business masterclass for 60 minutes. We talk about developing a robust business model with Mikey from USB Ed. And of course, our second half, we interview an SME owner, Mamelodi Biz. Very interesting thing developing there. So stay with us. CliffCentral.com.